The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the 17th episode of the Center Steer Podcast. It is August 24th in lovely Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's actually been a nice day today. I always like to report on the weather. And before we actually get started, we'll let you know that we are aware and trying to work on our audio quality, trying to get it to a consistent level. And we're working on that. I've actually decided I've reached the end of my capabilities and skill on having a mixer and several microphones and Skype callers that I've engaged an engineer to help us out. So as soon as I get that organized, hopefully we'll get quality consistent and also balanced. As I'm aware that the Skype is usually sounds better than those of us in the studio. So we're working on it. So if you're an engineer and want to help us out for free, hey. That'd be great.
Or you can help us out in exchange for time on the podcast.
That's true.
We'll let you speak your mind for a second or two.
And we're also open to your comments, ideas, if we're not covering topics that you want to hear about or we are talking about topics that you enjoy hearing about, let us know. We'll send us an email, send us a tweet, send us a Facebook and post. Do our best to get back to you as soon as possible. And And a shout out to Derek in St. Louis. I know he listens and he posts on the Facebook page. So hi, Derek. We have a large grouping today. Somehow the fates have aligned. We have three people in the studio and four people on Skype. Of course, I'm John Costage, and I drive a Series 3 109. Have been for the past couple weeks. It's been wonderful. Took it on vacation and had a wonderful time. It towed a trailer for me. And got me back and forth to my camping event. So it's been a lot of fun. And to my left,
I'm Harold, and I'm addicted to Rovers of all types.
I'm Dave Carroll, and I've got a number of discoveries that I like to take out and do terrible things to.
And Dave just moved, and we helped him yesterday to move. You may have seen me post a picture of that. That was fun. It was a fun time.
You may have heard the story. All. He is founding the Rovertopia.
82 acres of Land Rover goodness.
It better be. And on Skype we'll start with Mark.
Hello, this is Mark. I currently have a Series 3 88 and a currently down Fisco 2.
And you just joined Twitter, did you not?
I reluctantly have also joined Twitter.
Why did you reluctantly join Twitter?
It's just too connected.
Oh, too much. And you are Honey Badger Land Rover, right?
That sounds right.
I think it's HNYBADGER Land Rover. So if you want to follow Mark, although he hasn't said anything yet, he's favorited everything I've posted.
I'm on there and don't use it either. Yeah.
And then next to him on Skype is Steve over in the UK.
Hello. I have a 110 rough and ready camper type thing. And that's about it for me, really.
And he just came back from the Arctic Circle.
Hello.
Yes, we got you, Steve.
And I just came back from the Arctic Circle. But that's old news. That's old news now. I'm moving on.
You get bragging rights for life for that, Steve, around here.
At least a year or so. Come on, that was pretty cool.
Oh, in a year there'll be something different.
Well, until the sticker fades, how about that?
Okay, yeah, all right then, I'll let that.
And back on the North American continent in Vermont.
Hi, I'm Morgan, and I've also got a Series 3 88 slowly plodding through the frame over restoration of, and yeah.
Any update on that?
No, work's been in the way this summer.
Understood.
And weddings.
And dropping.
All my friends picked this summer to get married, so.
Weddings seem to happen that way, don't they? They seem to come in waves.
The nerve of some people.
And heading a little south into Connecticut is our own Nick Danger. I know that's not your real name, Nick, but that's how I know you.
It's close enough.
So what are you currently? Yours is your first time on the podcast. We thank you for joining us, and you're going to talk later about the Muddy Chef event. But tell us what you're driving.
I got a 72 Series 388. I did that frame over a few years ago. It's a long process.
You're still recovering from that process, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And Nick is also part of the Mighty Freelander Club, having owned a SE3.
Freelander Owner Survivors Group.
And one of my favorite pictures I ever took was of Nick's Freelander with the back off and your old dog sitting in the back. In the back of the...
Who was equally black as his truck, and so it made it for a good picture.
It did. So what happened to your Freelander, Nick?
I traded it into a unsuspecting dealer.
Yeah, smart move. So first up in the news, Tata has decided to share some information with from their Jag Land Rover unit and develop some vehicles, some SUVs specifically, with engineering assistance. And they're going to, build a 5- and 7-passenger model meant to lure buyers outside of India to the brand, specifically in Southeast Asia and the Middle East. They should be ready to launch in 2017, hoping to sell around 80,000 units. No indication they're coming to North America. I've never heard that, so my suspect is this is going to be an Asia thing only.
The article says it's going to be on a shared platform. I'm curious to whether that means it'll be a new platform that Land Rover will have access to, or whether it's one of the existing platforms which has been modified for the Tata.
Well, 17 is when the new Defender is supposed to come out, I think 17.
Well, so, that's a thought.
It is.
I would be interested to see the new Tatas.
I thought they mentioned that it was going to be on the Freelander base,
which
is very bizarre, considering it's old.
Oh, yeah. It says, for reading the article further, and this is on Autoblog, plans for these SUVs have been simmering for at least a few months, April, and looks like, yes, based on the Land Rover Freelander platform, according to an unnamed JLR exec at the time, the models will use 50% or less of the parts from the current Freelander. So maybe they're giving them old.
So I'm Freelander illiterate. I'm illiterate about a lot of things, but especially Freelanders. So were they an actual frame?
Freelander was a unibody.
Okay.
Yep.
It's really more like a car, which has been made into a Land Rover.
And it was also the Volvo, the second Freelander 2, or is it Freelander 3, was an XC?
No, the second generation Freelander, which was the LR2 over here, is shared platform with Volvo.
Right, that was the XC90?
I thought it was a 60.
Maybe it's 60 then. XC60.
I don't know my Volvo numbers very well.
Right. So next up in North America, well, specifically in the U.S., diesel sales are up 25% for.
Woohoo!
Yes, and as we're big fans of diesel engines, they have been up. So that's a good sign. But a little interesting fact was that Volkswagen, which is a leader here in the United States. They saw an 8% drop, but sounds like their sister company, Audi, took up the slack. And whereas Volkswagen sold 42,000 units, Audi sold 8,100 units. There's also a American company, Chevrolet, has the Cruze diesel. And
which is actually based on the Opel diesel power plant. So they're buying it out of Europe from their European division.
And they sold 3,000 units through June.
So yet another high-quality German turbo diesel unit.
I think it's interesting to see that Volkswagen has dropped off amidst growth and competition. Because they really...
Well, they had a lock on the market for so long. There was no competition in the diesels, and now...
Well, that's where I'm going. I mean, we really need to take these numbers maybe with a grain of salt. You see, all of a sudden, you're probably giving people options who wouldn't have bought a Volkswagen.
Right. People have choice now, and if they didn't want to have a Volkswagen, now they have an option, and there are many that want to buy a Chevrolet, even though it may not be made here. It is still an American name.
Right.
Well, there are 46 diesel models in the U.S., including 27 cars and SUVs.
Really?
That's what the article says. Go out to Autoblog. We'll have a link to the article, so feel free. It's a short one, but read it yourself.
Wonder what that number would have looked like 3 years ago.
Probably a lot less.
Yeah.
I mean, I think your point is that the total number of vehicles is still relatively small compared to how many vehicles are sold in the U.S. to begin with. So 25% sounds large, but it's 42,000 units out of the millions of cars sold in the United States.
25% of four is just one.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. But still,
it's something. It's a positive direction.
I think that's the thing. It's positive direction. You know, I bought a Jetta, and it's turbo diesel, and it's fantastic. And actually, I'm now,
outside of the engine controller, which was programmed by the soup Nazi.
Well, And so actually, my entire fleet now is all diesel.
You have an all-diesel fleet. Yes, you do.
Having sold at my Disco, too, it's completely diesel. So on to specifically on to Land Rover news, the Freelander, is being replaced by the Discovery Sport, and they have been doing some field testing of that. And there's a page, at least for us here on Rover Parts, which is Atlantic British. And Steve, I think you were watching that video. Can you tell us anything about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's between Virgin and Land Rover, they seem to be working quite well together to really push and advertise this. The Virgin Twitter feed has a lot about the Land Rover and Virgin Galactic partnership, whatever that is. And clearly, when you're looking at the video, you'd see a lot of, well, it's all about space and it's all about the Virgin Galactic and it's all about whatever partnership it is they've got. What I would say is it also looks very nice.
And they also put out a video that's called The Interior First Look, which I think was also made in conjunction with the Virgin Galactic. And it's just kind of a nice, spacey, airy video. It's only, I think, 50 seconds. And it doesn't show you a lot. There's a 5-second close-up of a subwoofer. But they're trying to show the interior of the Discovery Sport. And so it's a pretty nifty-looking video. They did a nice job on it.
The nav screen looked like it was getting ready for a bombing run.
It did, didn't it? We'll have a link to that YouTube.
The
where would you put them?
Yeah, I could say the field test video it actually looks really quite capable. There was kind of the three wheels with the one wheel off the ground kind of working, high speed snow maneuvers and a lot of sand work. So, it seems a capable vehicle at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess this testing they've done is in the, multiple seasons, of course. It's just temperatures range from a frigid -33 degrees Fahrenheit to a scorching 108 degrees Fahrenheit. So they've been
to California and Minnesota.
Yeah, you can all do it here on one continent.
That's right.
You don't even have to go to the Arctic Circle. That's the Discovery Sport coming, and the date on the video said 3 September, so I suspect we will know more come our next podcast exactly what's going on with the Discovery Sport. Further on in Land Rover news, and this was on Autocar from the UK, Land Rover Defender design sign-off. So Land Rover has finalized the design for the replacement of its 66-year-old Icon due to expire in 2015, but don't expect it to look like the DC-100 concept. This article is saying that they've frozen the design, but it's not going to look like the DC-100.
Which is the picture they show in the article.
Well, they don't have a picture to show. So why not show that?
They need to have like a circle and a slash through it.
Well, you feel free to do so. That's the I'm sure you become an editor of their publication.
Okay, I'll jump right on that.
There you go. So they
should we feel relieved or
without a doubt.
Well, the one thing about it is the DC-100 is at least the idiot you know.
And it grew on me as time went on. It's not completely...
If I had to live with it, I'm sure I could, but...
I'll tell you, I don't think the DC-100 looks that bad. It's not a Defender, though. I mean,
Right, that's my opinion, too, but...
Yeah, we don't know what terrible idea they just came up with.
Right, so what did they decide... does look like a Defender.
The fact that they're afraid
the DC-100 did.
If they're afraid to show it to us, which it seems like they might be.
The article went on to say they're working out how to release this information. They can do it piecemeal because, as Steve just said, they're working with Galactic, Virgin Galactic, Virgin Atlantic, whatever their company is, and they know how to do marketing. As we've seen in the past couple of years, actually, they know how to do good marketing, and I think that same thing's going to happen with this.
Right, they put on a good show.
They do. I mean, look what they did with the Discovery Sport when
when Jeff was there at the thing.
At the USS Intrepid. I mean, there they go. They rented out the Intrepid. They had a big production, a big show. So they know what they're doing. Will the new Defender look like a Defender? Will it act like a Defender? Who knows?
We need a mole at the corporate office.
Yes, I'll get right to that.
The news video is probably going to be shot on Mars or something bizarre.
Well, that would be cool. If they could get to Mars and shoot a picture of a Land Rover on Mars, I'm all for it.
I think that this is where Tata can come in more beneficial, because it wouldn't surprise me that when the new Defender comes out and everybody hates it, that Tata will just bring out the old shell and actually start producing them again.
You really think that might happen?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Well, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Mahindra is still making Jeep CJ2s.
Mm.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you, that's not the first. Steve's not the first person I've heard field that idea, and I have to agree. I could see this being produced somewhere else as exactly the same vehicle, just rebranded as something else.
Well, don't forget then.
That would make parts available.
But it still won't be available in the United States. It's still not going to meet safety and regulations.
No, but the parts would be. You could get the parts in to fix the ones that are here.
Right.
Right, but the parts are still going to be there. You have, Rovers North already takes care of parts for the vehicles. I don't see that being necessarily a problem if the vehicle were to go away and then we would not have parts. You can't do that.
You'd have a better source of original parts if they're still making it.
That's valid. That's valid. But I don't see that being a big deal.
Yeah, I'm fully willing to buy one as parts. Put it together.
Have somebody over in India buy it and mail it to you a part at a time.
I do have friends and associates in country there that could quickly, send things to me.
you still have to worry about Customs and Border Protection.
That was a Radar O'Reilly thing on MASH. He sent himself a Jeep one part at a time.
I forgot about that episode, yeah.
During his tour of duty over there, he just kept sending parts home.
Is that kind of like when the guys here in Pittsburgh, when they worked in the mill, they used to build their houses one part at a time by stealing stuff from the steel company?
Something very much like that. Yeah.
All right, so the Defender, as they claim it to be, the DC-100, is not going to happen. We mentioned that a couple months ago, but apparently it's more official than it has been, and you have to wait now for probably another year before you might see anything. So it's going to be a while because the Defender ends in 2015 as we know it. I think that they're holding to that date. And then don't forget, now that I think of it, was it a couple months ago, the designer, the Land Rover designer, was quoted as saying, hey, we're changing it. You just got to suck it up. That's Defender news. And we have one other bit of Defender news. We have a little the North America seizure update from Harold.
Right. Last month we had a lengthy discussion of the seizure issue. A number of trucks were seized by Customs. And if you didn't get the story, you need to go back and listen to our previous podcast. But basically Customs went out and did a coordinated effort and went after 40 trucks that they claim were imported illegally by a gentleman in North Carolina. We have an attorney on the case now working on behalf of many of the people whose trucks were taken. Not all, but most have availed themselves of his offer, and he is on the case. And the good news is that he has succeeded in getting the case dropped against six of those trucks, the six that were incorrectly identified by Land Rover as to their age. That case was dismissed against those trucks, and they were sent home. They have now been reunited with their owners at the government's expense. Your tax dollars at work, but it cost them nothing except a lot of heartache and a little bit of patience.
That's good news.
Yeah, that is excellent news. Meanwhile, the case still exists against the other trucks. The attorney for the defense, defender of the defenders, Will Hedrick, is still on the case. He is pursuing it. However, it's not going to be a quick thing, but he's still on it. He has told me that they are still pursuing the case, the government is, and that they do not have all of the 40 trucks in their possession yet, and they are still looking for them. So if you have one of those 40, don't think you're out of the woods yet.
Stay in the woods.
Yes, stay in the woods.
Deep in the woods.
Bunker up, and we'll have more updates as they develop, but for now, that's really all we have.
And now, the M word.
It's been said that those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. It has also been said that insanity can be defined as doing the same things repeatedly and expecting different results. From these two statements, one could deduce that failing to learn from our own history could lead to our own insanity. Some of the world's most successful civilizations survived for many centuries, some of them without a formal written language, But nonetheless, they all had a very well-developed system of instruction and storytelling to pass along the collective wisdom to each successive generation. The goal was not only to pass along the basic survival skills, but also to keep alive their rich cultural history. It would seem that we as a people have lost much of that ability. Television watching has replaced reading. Video games have replaced physical activity, and the internet has all but obliterated actual human interaction. A century ago, the telephone made it possible for two people to converse despite being separated by great distance. Recent advances have made it possible to carry a telephone anywhere without wires or bulky boxes. Today, it seems everyone has a telephone in their pocket. However, it seems that despite the apparent convenience, most people just don't talk as much anymore. And thanks to text messaging and social media applications, it would also seem they're incapable of communicating with actual words and proper sentence structure. While it is true that all languages evolve, it seems to me the linguistics of texting and tweeting go far beyond mere evolution. When you stop maintaining and caring for your teeth, they don't evolve, they decay. I find it rather ironic that this device that's enabling the decline in our collective intelligence is called a smartphone. In many popular films, the central plot revolves around computers becoming so advanced that the machines rise up and take over, replacing humans at the top of the food chain, at which point the humans are enslaved, or farmed like livestock, or just exterminated like vermin. It always seems like there is some sort of triggering event or a certain point in time when the machines suddenly become self-aware and then quickly take over. I propose that a more likely scenario begins not with a sudden awakening of superintelligent machines, but rather with the gradual extinction of human intelligence to the point where we don't even realize that we've been replaced. How do we prevent our own extinction? We don't have to arm ourselves and hunt down the robots. We just have to let them know that we, the people, are still in charge. Put down the smartphone and step away from the screen. Go outside. Use your feet for propulsion. Get to know your neighbors. Make some new friends. Have conversations that last for longer than 140 characters. Most importantly, exchange real information. Listen and learn from others, and share the things you've learned. Cultivating the collective intelligence is what makes a civilization thrive and not wither and die. For those of us who share an interest in old cars and trucks, we should especially be concerned. Today's computer-controlled vehicles are too complicated for the average do-it-yourselfer, and far too many so-called professionals rely on diagnostic machines to do their thinking for them. Many new car dealers are incapable of working on a vehicle that can't interface with their diagnostic computer, even if it's from the brand they supposedly represent. There's already a very real shortage of capable, analytical thinkers with basic mechanical skills. Unless we can find a way to cultivate and propagate this important skill set, the old car hobby will be in serious trouble when our generation retires. We can't rely on our public schools, as cutbacks and a shifting focus towards college prep have all but eliminated industrial education. Schools rely on external vocational schools and private trade schools to fill the gap. Smart kids are pushed into academics, and the rest are handed off to other schools. So for those of you with old-world skills, diagnostic abilities, or other special talents, it's time to put down your buckets of ice water, because I have a real challenge for you. Seek out young people with an interest in mechanical things. Teach them what you know. Share your passion for old machinery. Inspire them to do things with their hands and their brains, not just their thumbs on a game controller. It used to be that fathers passed these things on to their kids, but we need to look beyond our immediate families. There might be a prospect in the workplace, or the neighbor kid with nothing better to do. Look for bright kids who might have the interest, but just not have access to the skills. All it takes is one spark, properly kindled, to light a raging fire. For those of you who fear for the future of the old car hobby, I challenge you to safeguard its future. To paraphrase the Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
It's time to talk about Land Rover events and related other kind of events, expeditions and overland kind of events. There's been a couple that have already happened, and a couple of our folks have attended. First up is the Volar event. Am I saying that right, Morgan?
It's probably Volar or something like that. It's the Vermont Overland Rovers event. they capitalized the L in land to make it V-O-L-R. This was put on by the Vermont Overland team, who they do various driving tours around Vermont. They put on events. This was my first event, so that was fun to go to an all Land Rover event. Actually hitched a ride down with the photographer from Rovers North, which was nice. I actually got to ride down in 2012 Puma Land Rover Defender 110. So that was awesome. So before anybody, they did let Zach drive it.
Okay. They managed to get the coolest toys in to look at.
Exactly. So yeah, that was fun. So that nobody gets in trouble here. It is actually a perfectly legal Defender, because they get to import them for a couple of years just as demo vehicles, because they sell them to NGOs and all of that, and government organizations. So very fun to see that.
Under the exhibition clause.
Right. Exactly.
That's one you have to apply for and get special permission in writing, but it is doable.
Yep. Very fun. Very nice to see a very nice, powerful, modern Defender.
Yeah, they get the nice toys over there.
Definitely. So that was a nice start. We actually, the event runs from the Friday through Sunday. They have a whole bunch of trails and I think they're class 4 roads in Vermont. They're legal state roads, but no longer maintained. So perfectly legal to go off-roading on them. So they had a whole bunch of those set up. I only attended from basically Saturday morning through Sunday morning due to some timing issues. But it was very nice to see all the Land Rovers. There was the big event that I especially went for was the frameover swap on the farm owner's 1967 Series 2A. So that was fun. That was my main attraction.
There's a time-lapsed video of the truck rebuild on their site, which is vermontoverland.com. We'll have a link to that.
Exactly.
That was our friend Tim helping out on that frameover, was it not?
Yeah, it was Tim and Dennis, Tim Smith, of BAR. Can't remember what what they let that acronym stand for.
I bet Dennis could tell you.
Probably. I want to say it was like British Automotive Research or something like that. And then also the Red Barn Engineering guys were there. Bob and I can't remember the other guy's name. There was also somebody there doing welding. So they had a very nice setup. They basically did it in about a day and a half. I think they did some prep that I missed on the first day. So it might have ended up being about 2 days, but it drove away at the end. It was nice. Very fun to see that swap over complete. Still has some work to be done on it, but Atlantic British provided a new galvanized chassis and a whole bunch of other parts, you know, new wiring harness, all of that. I think the Red Barn guys provided most of the fittings. And the farm itself provided the tractor that was used for most of the lifting.
Did you come away with any new skills or inspirations for your own frame over?
I did, yeah. As some might recall from quite a while ago, I had some damage to the rear outriggers on my frame. Yes. Unloading it.
There were some trees involved in that incident, as I recall.
There were some trees involved, which I, you know, straightened by hand, but I had planned to reinforce. So the chassis that they were using already was reinforced. So got some nice photos of how that was done. So I have plans for reinforcing mine.
Excellent.
Yeah, definitely. And did get to help out a little bit. Some of the just random projects, pulling wires, dropping and putting back on the fuel tank a number of times, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was fun. And then,
are you ready to go with your own truck?
I would love it if they keep doing that and just let somebody else bring their truck each time.
I'll bet the waiting list for that would be pretty long.
I think so. Yeah, and apparently they had the idea to do Justin's truck. This was Justin Lilly of Lilybrook Farm, who was hosting the event. So he had that sitting in his barn for, I think, over 10 years and had done some work on it before parking it. So, yeah.
Well, that's been planning for
a few years anyway.
That's fair trade for hosting the event, letting people use his land, as I see it.
Oh, absolutely.
a new idea for Dave then, I guess, huh?
Now we're talking.
That's genius.
Exactly.
Well, now that we've been to Dave's new home, we're trying to convince him to have an actual Land Rover event there down in Greene County.
It's Washington.
Is it Washington? I thought that was Green.
No.
Oh.
I would have to have married my sister to be in there.
You know, in addition to all of the folks down there who were, you know, there with their vehicles off-roading. Jim McCree, who some may remember an article from the Rovers magazine put out by Rovers North, that he has been restoring a number of Land Rovers. He recently run, I guess it was last year, won the Stowe British Invasion. I think he got first and second place. His Series 1 restoration got first place, and I think his Series 2A got second place. So he was there with his Series 1, his Series 2A. He also has a NAS D90 that he restored a number of years ago. He also has a brand new 2014 Range Rover Autobiography Edition.
Wow.
That was very nice. In addition to all of those, he has... which was mentioned at the very tail end of the last article. He has an electric Series 1 golf cart conversion, which was very fun to see, you know, the kids riding around in, stuff like that.
So it's like a half scale.
Yeah, just about. So they, I think they cut down wings from a Series 1, but most everything else they had to custom manufacture.
Sure. But it's a golf cart that looks like a Series 1.
I think I need pictures. The farm came with two golf carts.
So Jim and his mechanic, Glenn Parent, have been also restoring Series 3. So that was fun to chat with them about that. Jim basically has Glenn on as a full-time mechanic, and he has his own little museum of these vehicles he's restored. And in addition to the Series 3, mentioned briefly in the last article, and then after the Volar event came out in the Rovers magazine, a full article about their center steer replica they're building. So it was actually a lot of fun to talk to them about that, because they just went over to Europe trying to track down... there's one replica of the center steer at Dunsfold. So they went and talked to one of those engineers and a couple others. They are well on their way to building their own center steer here in the U.S.
We need them on our podcast for obvious reasons.
Absolutely. And they are paying attention to the details. as is very clear from looking under the hood of any of his restorations. But yeah, that's going to be a very fun project.
Any chance you can go over there and tour it in person and do an on-site for us?
Oh, absolutely.
And for our listeners, you can go out, and we'll, I'll have a link to this. The Rovers North has all their past magazine articles available in PDF form on their website, and I'll have a link to that. So you can track down that article if you like to read it. Do you know what
absolutely.
Issue? Do you know what issue that is, Morgan?
Yeah, it's in their current one, the summer 2014.
Which I don't think they publish it until the next one comes out. I think for obvious reasons they kind of keep it, they're back 1 month. So right now they have the spring 2014 Rovers magazine available.
Oh, really? I thought you could get the PDFs immediately.
Not what I can tell, at least when I'm looking at their webpage right now.
Cool.
Although it says, oh, wait a minute, there's a link to Rovers magazine online. Maybe I didn't see this link before.
They have a new they have a new site specifically for Rovers magazine, which I think that was for the
yes, it was. It was for the for the masthead. Yes.
Exactly. The masthead is very similar to the Center Steer masthead.
Yeah, where'd they get that
from? Blueprints of the Center Steer.
Yes, exactly. That's a Center Steer.
I guess somebody failed to copyright that.
I think they did. Yeah, well, it didn't seem to be copyrighted.
Which allowed us to use it.
Yes, exactly. Well, we're going to have to talk to Jeff about this. Actually, we do need to get Jeff on the podcast again. He's asked to be on the podcast, so we'll have to set something up.
That was fun last time he was with us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Definitely. And he was at the event as well, so that was fun to bump into him.
Did he know who you were?
You know, he sees a lot of people, so it didn't take long for him to remember me.
Well, that's cool.
But,
that's cool.
You know, at least recognize me by sight, obviously.
He notionally knew who you were.
Exactly. And it was nice to see he was down there in, what does he have for a sports car? Little British blue sports car, which
Corvair. Doesn't he have a Corvair?
No.
No. He's running around in a Spitfire now.
Yes, that's right. Which I believe you provided the top for that, which was keeping him dry.
That's correct.
Nice.
Be hitting them up shortly, I think, for some serious parts in exchange.
Nice.
Welcome to the British car community.
So anything else from Vermont Overland?
No, it was a great event. This one was very laid back compared to many of their other events, which was very nice.
All right, we're going to move on to the Muddy Chef Challenge, and our own Nick Danger, you attended this event.
Yes, it was the first weekend in August. That would be, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the usual weekend kind of event. The events actually started early Friday morning. We were already hitting trails at Orvis, which is in Middlebrook, New York, and that was where they were trail riding, trap shooting. Orvis actually gave classes in both trap shooting and fly fishing, which a lot of people took advantage of. The trap shooting line was pretty long, actually. That evening was one of the fancier Land Rover events I had ever been to. It was at an estate of Crown Maple Syrup, and there was cocktails and hors d'oeuvres, and everyone wore their finery. I was definitely one of the less fancy dressed people that was there. It was quite an event. Just great food, great people, great drinks. And then the next morning there was more trail rides in the Great Mountain Forest of Connecticut, which is some Yale property and some private state property. Then we went back to Lime Rock Park. All this camping was at Lime Rock Park, which is one of the oldest racetracks in the country, where we had rides on the skid pad in a Lotus Elise. Some of us did. Some of us just got too dizzy on the first ride to go around a second time. But
would that be you?
Yeah, I kind of got out of the car a little wobbly. it was
hangovers will do that.
Yeah, it was fun. The big event of the Muddy Chef part was we had to cook that night in the campsite using whatever we would bring on our trucks. So there was some propane stoves. We did charcoal. Somebody actually did blow torches. They were making donuts, I believe. Raspberry glazed donuts, which awesome. Were delicious. Oh, they were fantastic. The food, I was not prepared for the level of competition that was there.
Now, do they give style points for creative methods and materials?
Yeah, they did. They did. In fact, I think the blowtorch guy got some awards for blowtorching things. There was also a deep fat fryer. One of the winning foods was a jambalaya that was made over a giant like propane. I don't know. I don't even know what it was. It was a giant propane burner.
Turkey fryer.
Cool. Yeah, that's what it'll look like. The winning team was two men and a rover who pretty much swept the entire event, both the appetizer, the main dish, and the dessert. They took first place. I can only tell you what the dessert was, which was fresh local berries and maple whipped cream that they whipped on site.
Wow.
Using maple syrup from the maple place that we had gone to the night before.
I can only imagine that's probably outstanding.
Unfortunately, we didn't know that you were supposed to use the maple stuff from the place the night before, so we ate it all on pancakes that morning and didn't actually have anything for the food event.
You didn't smuggle out enough in your kilts then, I guess, huh?
Yeah, apparently not. And I got ripped on the style points. I had my kilt on, and I didn't even get an award for that.
What food did you make? Did you use the Dutch oven?
We made a Dutch oven meatloaf. It was meat, veal, bacon, Italian sausage, and jalapeno peppers.
And that didn't
and
win?
It was probably – no. He was missing
maple syrup.
Exactly. I was going to say if you had tossed some maple syrup in there, that would have been the kicker.
Well,
we didn't win, but we went through about 4.5 pounds of meatloaf in probably a half an hour with the people just coming through our tent for meatloaf samples. So we didn't win, but if there was a People's Choice Award, I think we would have been there.
See, what you needed was the Utila nice. Kilt with all the spatulas stuffed in the pockets and the maple syrup there too.
Probably. That might have helped. There was about 40, I think there was 40 teams competing. There was about 150 people there. Next year, they want this to be one of the largest events on the East Coast, so I think next year they're going to be pushing even bigger.
Wow. What's the entry fee?
There wasn't any.
And what kind of trails are there?
The trails were not bad. The trails were not bad at all. There was the Orvis had their own off-roading trails, which is one of the Land Rover Experience trails. I didn't go to the Great National Forest because I was prepping for my Dutch oven cooking. My nephew actually jumped in a truck with I don't know if you remember Forrest from, he did some Land Rover restorations in Connecticut. He jumped in his truck and went off-roading and came back and was very happy. So I
run,
think there were, Forrest. There were decent trails.
Run, yes. Forrest, run.
Yeah, there were some pretty Clifton Rovers, I believe, was the name of his restoration company.
So, do you think that the event site can handle a bunch more people, or is this something I need to move to a different location?
They claim that they can do it. They claim the campground can do 300 people. We felt pretty packed, but we were kind of all congregating next to the utilities and the American Harvest vodka tent. There was plenty of free vodka. So
that's a good start right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic first night when the American Harvest people started making what they called the American Mule, which is American Harvest vodka, ginger beer, and something else. And they were quite delicious.
Oh, my.
I like the list of sponsors for the event. And we'll have a link to their website, of course. But Crown Maple, Harpoon Brewery, which is out of Boston. That's outstanding beer. Did you check that out?
I think they gave us 7 kegs, and there was 2 left untapped by the end of the weekend. But we went through a lot of it.
Obviously, we need to attend next year.
I think we need F-Plurg there in presence.
Yeah. What's Monkey 47?
I don't know.
And Yeti Coolers was there.
How could you not know about something with monkeys in it, Nick?
I know. Sad, isn't it? Actually, I don't know who a lot of the sponsors were. I did win a case of performance oil from Spectre Performance Oils, though. their tent was very nice, and he asked me what I ran in the Rover and was not happy when I said the cheapest oil that was on the shelf. So he ended up giving me a case of oil and said, do an oil change on me.
Now, was that enough to get you home?
Yeah, I trailered it. Yeah.
Aww.
What are you using to tow?
My brother actually went up with me, who is the primary chef. He's got a big GMC. We ended up driving around that weekend because the camping and the trails and the various things were not actually close to each other. But, you know, there's a difference between cruising around back roads of New York and doing I-91. So,
right. Is this in New York or Connecticut?
It's actually up in the upper corner of Connecticut was the camping. The trails were in New York. So it was right on the border.
Hmm. That's not far from you. Morgan, you're not too far away, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
So we
need just a little further up 91.
We need to have all of us there next year. We can do the podcast from there.
Yeah, actually, you guys should come down. We ended up doing an emergency repair on a 200 TDI, doing an alternator replacement. Rovers North showed up Saturday with the replacement, and we swapped it in.
That's an easy job.
When is the event?
First weekend in August. So whatever that'll be next year. First August weekend.
No, cool. I'm on vacation. You guys can have a good time.
Yeah, I was looking at it this year and thought it'd be really cool. It didn't work out for me this year, but I'd like to go next year and I'd like to be able to take the meat wagon and cook some meat.
Oh, absolutely. I'm telling you, the competition was tough, but now that I've seen it, I'm bringing it next year.
I got some style points for you, Nick. I got something in mind.
Oh, anywhere with you is stylish.
We could bring an actual Scotsman in a kilt with pipes.
Yeah, that might win.
Well, he has to know how to cook, though.
Nick can help.
He can just play while we serve, and we'll still nail it.
Yeah, there was one of the teams actually presented their food on the hood of a Range Rover. They actually carried the Range Rover hood over with all the plates organized on the hood.
That's a good start.
You know, I've been thinking about getting one of those military kitchens, maybe to tow. Maybe that might be the
Sankey Field Kitchen?
The Sankey Field Kitchen, or even an American version, yeah. Mm-hmm. That might be a good reason to go. Well, let's move over to Europe and talk about Billings.
Yeah, it was its 24th year of running. It's the Billing Land Rover Fest. It's a really good weekend. I only made it for a day, but it's very family oriented. It actually takes place on the Billing Aquadrome, which is a campsite anyway. And so there's already kids amusements and things like that going on. So it makes it very family friendly. It was a good show. It's all the general kind of things, the market, loads of clubs. Probably if it wasn't every club in the UK, it was very close to it. There were hundreds of Land Rover clubs there. And they were all taking time. They all had about 10 or 15 minutes each to go through the main arena and just kind of talk about their vehicles, and whoever turned up with something a bit flash, then they'd talk about that. So that was quite interesting. They had a Gymkhana running, so there was a few people kind of doing time trials around the arena, trying not to knock tennis balls off the top of traffic cones. And then they had a few people that were just generally climbing over each other's Land Rovers with their own Land Rovers, which is kind of an interesting concept. It's all kind of good fun, really. One of the things that I liked about it particularly was that they had a good show of all the Camel Trophy vehicles and the G4 vehicles, I say all. There was a good show of the vehicles there, and me being a kind of overland kind of fan, that was really interesting to see and walk around all of those guys. It's generally a good show, what I saw of it. Like I say, I was only there for a day this year. Next year is its 25th, so I'm not sure what they've got planned, but hopefully it'll be something fairly major. It's a good show, you know.
So I was looking at the list of clubs, and you said there are a lot. I'm surprised at the number of clubs there are for Land Rovers in the UK. I guess, well, they're not necessarily all Land Rover specific, are they?
There are a lot. I mean, we considering it's only, you know, England and it's only a small place, every county must have one or two. And then you have just generally the 4x4 clubs as well. I mean, there are hundreds. Just in my local area here, there are three. I'm a member of one. I've got friends in one of the others. And they're only 20 miles apart. So, there's a lot of clubs around.
Well, there are plenty of Rovers over there, of course, too.
There are quite a lot.
But the interesting thing is that you are able to have so many clubs that you now have clubs that are model specific. I'm seeing the Series 1 club, the Series 2 mm-hmm. club, one I would love, the 101 Forward Control Club.
That's right, there are. And it is just a whole lot. It's all the discoveries as well. There's a lot of different clubs, and it even starts to break down into the kind of the mud plug-in as well. So you've got clubs just for Land Rovers that go to the pay and play quarries and things like that as well, plus green laning clubs, plus just show clubs and so on and so forth. There are a hell of a lot, as John will probably find out soon.
That's right. I like the Just Defenders and Series Club. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Just get right to the point.
Yeah.
They should have one called Leaf Springs Only at that rate.
There you go. That's good.
And John, since you'll be representing us, maybe you could get the FPLRG listed too.
Oh, there we go. Well, but you'd have to go to billing. And it's billing singular, for the record, not plural like I've been saying.
Now, as I understand it, the billing show has been on for a while, Steve. I think you said 25 years. Now, there's also the Peterborough show. Which one is the bigger of the two shows?
Peterborough is the daddy. Absolutely. Mainly because it's run, the Land Rover owners is actually probably the most popular UK magazine for Land Rover.
Right.
And they organize the Peterborough show. So it makes it the big show, really.
Now, has that always been the bigger of the two? I seem to remember, I thought I heard someone saying that billing used to be much bigger and it's been losing some thunder.
I don't know on that. I mean, everyone knows Land Rover owners. Everyone knows the magazine. And so that really kind of hits it because it's in the magazine. You know, it's advertised and it's really pushed. It's probably a little bit more local, but still a big show.
Although Billings touts itself as the daddy of Land Rover shows.
Yeah, on the Billing Land Rover Fest website, they call themselves the daddy of all shows.
So did you actually camp at Billing?
No, I was only there for a day. It's only an hour away from where I live, so I just went for the Saturday. It's a weekend show. This time I only went for the Saturday, knowing that I've got a couple of others coming up this year anyway. So, that was just a more of a pop-in for the day. I picked up some carpet to kind of cover my wheel inner wheel arches, and just a few odds and sods like that, really. It was, for me, just a quick drop in and see what was going on kind of show. The LRO one is going to be the one that I'm more interested in spending a good amount of time there.
How much does the Billing show cost?
It was £9, I think, to get in just for the day. Not really expensive. I don't know about the camping.
And so we'll move into upcoming events. I think that's all there is for past events. And first up on the list is Rovers on the Rocks here in the United States. That takes place in the East Coast. And I know it's happening, Dave. You know a little more about it than I do, but we don't have a date. Is that right?
We've not seen an official date. It is typically the Veterans Day holiday weekend, with off-roading starting officially on Friday at Roush Creek Off-Road Vehicle Park in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Now, you're a multiple survivor of that event, are you not, Dave?
Yes, and survivor is probably the best way to describe it. Roush Creek is not necessarily someplace that's for the faint of heart.
Not the place to take your girlfriend on a first outing.
Not unless you don't want her to be your girlfriend when it's all over.
But what if your Land Rover is your girlfriend?
Well, maybe not the first place, well, best place to take it on its first outing.
Then odds are that it's coming back looking like you've beaten it.
All right, so we'll have a link to that show as best as we know it, and that's coming up. This is number 6, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, number 6. I know you've been here a couple of years.
It's a great event.
Yeah, it looks fun.
But you have to go in fully prepared to accept that you're going to get body damage.
Yeah.
As our club prime minister says, if you can't afford to write the truck off, you shouldn't be there.
That is, and Rouse Creek is a place that can happen very, very quickly.
And then next is the Land Rover National Rally. This is taking place September 16th through the 21st in Moab, Utah. That's all I've never been. I know, Nick, you've been, have you not?
Yes.
And you want to tell us a little bit about the show? Or about the event?
This year's in Moab.
Yes.
It's quite different than anything you do on the East Coast. The whole idea of what they call slick rock and the trails out there, it's just a whole different experience. It's worth going. I think you should, put it in your calendar to try to go one year.
And I think they rotate between Colorado and Utah, is that right?
Yeah, they rotate every year between Colorado and Utah. I would definitely try to go to the Utah thing just because, as I said, it's so different than East Coast. There's no trees, there's no mud. It's just a whole – it's sand and rocks. But it's not like rock crawling. It's a whole different thing.
I've been to Moab in that area, and it really does look like Mars.
Exactly. You feel like you're on a different planet. But it's the usual Rover guys. Everybody out there is great. I was met with open arms, even though I ended up flying in and renting a minivan, which was embarrassing. But, I was still accepted and had a great time. Actually, I met King Bill out there, and Bill and I rode trails together.
Now, that's not the first time you've shown up at a Rover event in a van now, is it?
It's the first time I ever shown up in a van.
I thought you showed up at one of our events one time in a van when you first met us. People were giving you a hard time about it.
No, he can't.
Well, yeah, that was a work van. I guess you could say it was the second time in a van.
Yes, we met him at a Mar event many years ago, and yeah, I think he did jump in a van.
Who's the jerk in the company work van?
And Scooter wanted to throw beer bottles at me. It was great.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Yeah, that's Scooter.
All right, so that's the national rally. Anything special take place? I know it's put on by the Sully Hall Society. Is it like any other event that you typically attend, or is there something extra?
No, it's your typical Land Rover event. I mean, the year that I went, they actually auctioned off a full Range Rover off-roading truck. So it's a big event, but Ooh. it's your standard things.
Gotcha. Any idea how many people show up typically?
In the hundreds.
Wow.
In the hundreds. I'm going to say like 300. You've been to Mar, so it's pretty much Mar on the other side of the country.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Speaking of Mar, that's supposed to take place in October this year, the 2nd through the 5th, which is its typical month. I think that's all the information we have on it, though, right now.
That may be all the information that exists. I think they're still trying to put the details together.
Gotcha. That's put on by Rove, which is the Rover Owners of Virginia.
I believe it is at the same location that they had last year.
Okay. Didn't get a chance to go. I don't think anybody that I know got to go.
It would be Blacksburg, Virginia, if I remember.
I think it's, way, way down in the southwestern corner, like farther, deeper into Virginia than we've ever gone before for one of those events.
Yeah, it's good for folks in the D.C. area. There's a lot of Land Rover owners in the D.C. area. It's good for them to get out and about. Well, going back a little bit, a month before that is a conclave, and that takes place September 18th through the 21st, roughly the same time as a national rally. Dave, I know we went to conclave last year, the year before. You've been
there
a number of times, Dave.
I've been there at least 3 times now.
Yeah, it's a nice event.
It's at the Cove, which is a camping ground and off-road park in Gore, Virginia, right, which is northern Virginia.
Yeah, our side of Virginia. It's just a shorter trip for us.
Yeah, it's the Cove might be thought of as a much tamer version of Rouse Creek. There's a lot of very good, very challenging trails. There's a lot of rocks. There's a lot of mud. There's a lot of tight trails, but at the same time, there are a lot of nice green lanes for people that don't want to take the level of risk that some of us tend to assume.
Or who might be there on a first date.
Yes. If you're there on your first date, be it with a person or a rover, you could come out unscathed.
Yeah, it's a nice event. Camping, decent trails, and I think the entry fee is $90, if I'm not mistaken, and you pay additional for passengers and T-shirts. So.
And that includes dinner Saturday night.
And, yeah, dinner was fun. And moving along, the weekend after that is the British invasion in Stowe, Vermont. That takes place September 19th through the 21st. And I believe, Morgan, you have been before?
I have not. I've had scheduling conflicts the last few years. This year I should be able to go. This year, Land Rover is not the highlighted marquee, but it's the one of the only British vehicle shows in the area, so all the Land Rovers crawl out of the woodwork.
Kind of like the Vintage Grand Prix here in the Pittsburgh area.
Exactly.
And then that same weekend is Peterborough, which is the Land Rover Owners International Show, taking place in Peterborough, United Kingdom. And can you tell us a little bit about that, Steve?
Yeah, I would say it's the premier show for the UK. Land Rover Owner International is the main magazine that we have in the UK. Everybody knows this show's taking place, and it should be the big one. September 20th to 21st, so it's only over the Saturday and Sunday, but camping starts from Friday. They have an off-road course there as well. Loads of exhibitions, loads of stalls and traders and so on going there. The clubs will all be there as well. And they have entertainment on the Saturday night as well, which is normally a local live band or two playing. It should be a good night, a good weekend, really. And I'm having a special guest.
Yes,
well.
You are. I have decided, just because I felt like it, I am going to fly over to the UK and actually attend that show. You've been nice enough to say you'll pick me up at the airport and let me sleep in the 110, right?
Absolutely.
So if you are UK-based and I'm going to try to meet up with us, me and Steve, and we can be happy to chat and talk with you. And I'm going to take some recording devices and hopefully do some field reporting from the show and other places. I'm also hoping to attend the I've sent my money in for the Land Rover Experience and Factory Tour. Because why not? I've never.
You've made the trip. You've got to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't been. You know, I spent a lot of time in London, and I've never really been too far out of London. So my plan this time is to stay out of London and do some things like maybe Manchester and or Solihull.
Well, when you were in London, that was before your addiction set in.
It was, actually. Although London is where my addiction set in.
The seeds were planted there, definitely.
They were. My second trip in 1999. I saw a Freelander in Berkeley Square, and I was like, what is that? And then I checked it out on the internet later, and that's how my Rover addiction started. A little short little story for you. That's what happened.
And it's been all downhill since then.
So, yes, I will be attending. I'll try to tweet as best as possible, if I'm depending on how connectivity is there, and I suspect it'll be difficult, but I'll try to tweet a little bit and talk about it and do some field reporting. I may post something from there. We'll see what happens. So that's the Land Rover International Show. I thought about trying to go to the show after, but I just can't swing the vacation. And that's the what's that, Adventure Overland? Is that the show, Steve?
Yes, it is. And I think should I talk about that now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're gonna. That's the big one you want to attend this year, right?
That's the main one for me. It's not Land Rover based. It's the weekend after. The LRO show, but it is all about anyone and everyone who travels overland. So it's all marks, all makes, motorbikes as well. It will be covering everything from mechanics, bush mechanic kind of work, the vehicles. There are some amazing vehicles that go to this, huge ex-military, I wouldn't even know what they're called, to be honest. They're just very, very big, that have been made into what look like houses, to be honest. And so, yeah, it's a big show, this one. One that I'm looking forward to give me a few more ideas and a few more things that I would like to do to this old 110 before I head off on my next overland journey.
You got to shoot me some pictures of some of those eight-wheel drive mans.
Oh, seriously, they are awesome. I will, absolutely.
So what is your next journey, have you decided?
It's looking like Morocco at the moment, via the Pyrenees. So it'll be, again, another 3 weeks, probably 4,500 miles, heading down to Marrakesh and Casablanca.
Does that aboard mean the Marrakesh Express?
Well, not so much of an express, but, you know, 50 miles an hour trundling.
As express as a vintage Landy will do.
Yeah, exactly.
Will you visit a bit of the empire at Gibraltar?
Yeah, probably, because I'll probably go from Gibraltar to across to Tangiers to make the journey across. It was either going to be Morocco or I was going to head over towards Chernobyl and Pripyat. But considering there's a few issues in Ukraine at the moment, I'll probably skip that.
I think that's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chernobyl doesn't even...
That's an interesting alternative, Steve. I think I like the Morocco better myself. But...
I would love to go to Chernobyl.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. It's actually safe-ish now.
Not quite so warm.
Yeah, not quite so warm. And yeah, although you do kind of tingle a bit as you walk around. yeah, it's just a ghost town and nature is taking over again. So it's just a very interesting place to go.
If Clarkson can do it, I guess you can.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It can look amazing. I'd love to see it myself with a guy counter.
I'm sure you're probably required to take one.
Maybe a safety badge or three.
Yeah, I mean, the what they say is that the level of radiation there now is less than a chest x-ray.
For what time period?
Well, if you're there for the day, then it's less than a chest x-ray.
Oh, okay.
So don't break down and have to get out and work on it.
Well,
that might be the problem.
I know that they are actually starting to repopulate some of those areas. Oh, yeah. They had previously evacuated.
I'm sure the closer you get, the better, the worse it is. But yeah.
Well, they're moving in older people and folks that. To be perfectly honest, it sounds like they're not going to be around long enough.
Yeah, some people didn't move out. They hung around and they're still there, which is very, very strange. But yeah, nature's taking over again now. There's a lot of dogs, a lot of birds, and apparently with no ill effect or anything like that now. When you actually go near the old power station, then it gets a little bit scary, apparently, the levels of radiation. But in the local town-ish, it's fairly safe. If anyone plays Call of Duty... you'll know exactly where it is because it plays a big part in one of the, I think it was in Modern Warfare 1 or 2. Pripyat plays quite a big part in that. And it's fairly safe apparently now.
Okay. So then, and before that is the Metal Dash weekend, and that takes place September 26th through the 28th.
Yes, that's it's right over the border in Massachusetts, lower Massachusetts, right by Connecticut. From what I can tell, I've never been before. From what I can tell, it's a lot of series truck owners, although occasionally they let some of us with the plastic bits on our dash attend, you know, those fancy people. But it's more or less a swap meet, some green laning, and a big camp out for everyone to get together. I don't think it's a big off-roading type event.
I think they do somewhat of an English Trials event at the very end, but yeah, it's mostly swap event from what I hear as well, camping and all that.
Well, I am going to try to get there, so I'll give you a report afterwards.
Good. Well, we'd like that.
It would seem a little weird driving in there without a metal dash, though.
I can break some plastic off. That'll work.
I might have to do the metal dash upgrade to my P-38.
But isn't the Series 3 dash just metal covered in plastic?
More or less.
Yes, there is metal in there somewhere, definitely.
Not that deep in there either.
Actually, it's something that once was metal. Now it's more iron oxide.
Well, yes. Well, I was talking about OEM, original out of the factory.
I believe the gauge panel is all Bakelite, isn't it, Harold?
It's a polymer of some sort. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, because mine's cracked pretty bad.
The steering wheel and all of that is definitely Bakelite.
Yeah. It's something that turns to goo when it gets wet. As the blackened hands after moving Mark's truck into my shop has told me.
It's organic. It breaks down. Moving on to October 3rd through the 5th, which is the same weekend as Mar, is the Overland Expedition East. And this is apparently a new event. I know one of our panelists, Mike Henniger, is going to attend this year. And it's new, right? So this is a smaller version or an East Coast version of the Overland Expedition?
Well, I don't know about size, but they are billing it as the East Coast version of the Overland Expedition.
That would be cool. That event always looks pretty interesting. That usually takes place on the West Coast or actually
Arizona.
Okay, Colorado, something like that. Okay. So hopefully we'll get Mike to talk about that after he gets back. I do not have enough vacation to attend. So maybe if anybody else is going to go, we'd like
Where
to.
Where is that?
Asheville, North Carolina, or the vicinity.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, Mike is going in his representative capacity for his day job, but he's looking forward to being able to check it out at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah, Scooter will be in attendance also.
Oh, good. Well, wonderful.
Mike and Scooter and 100 knives. That sounds like a good combination.
There's going to be a motorcycle involved and a bunch of off-roading.
And a lot of Band-Aids.
Yeah, put all that together, and it should be a very exciting weekend.
Yeah.
And then the weekend after that is the Northeast Overland Rally and Workshop. That's going to take place October 9th through the 12th. And who knows more about that?
I know a little bit more about that. I think it's in, with the exception of winter, it's similar to Winter Romp, that basically it's a rally to just sort of go around and go through Vermont and, visit the local businesses and all that.
And so that's like a version of that Vermont Overland tournament?
Yeah, it's not like the tournament, which is a very much more of a challenge. But yeah, it's just sort of travel around, do some trails. They do have some workshops and stuff like that.
Cool.
Much more scheduled than the event I just went to.
Well, those are the upcoming events that we know about through October or so, especially in the East Coast and in the UK. If you are having another interesting event that you're attending or want to talk about, we're certainly happy to hear about it. So this has been the 17th edition of the Center Steer podcast for August of 2014. If you, again, have any comments, questions, or some interesting topics you want us to discuss or you want to discuss yourself, go ahead and reach out to us. Twitter's good. Email's good. Facebook even is fine. And we'll try our do best to get back to you as soon as possible. As I'm attending the Peterborough show, if you are in the UK and you're attending, let me know. I'd like to actually like to meet you and talk with you. Maybe we'll even record something and we'll try to do a little field report from the United Kingdom, the home of Land Rovers. That's the episode. Thanks very much. We will talk to you sometime in September. Not sure yet when. Thanks for listening, everybody. The Center Steer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Mibio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mibio.com.
If you let them sleep in the truck, don't leave the keys in it.